From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. A few months after 9/11, Anthony Mall did what a lot of teenagers did, raised his hand and took an oath to the U.S. Army. For a working-class kid in a stagnant city, the Army meant escape. For a bisexual with pink hair, the Army at that time also meant don't ask, don't tell. Even after Maul established himself in the Army, when rumors leaked about his relationship with a man, his sergeant struggled when she pulled him aside.
She can't say the words, right? The policy is you can't say the words. And so she just keeps enforcing, you have to be careful, you have to be careful, you gotta be safe. We can't have an MP, a military police, with a reputation of being that gay MP.
Maul's memoir, Out of Step, is on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. For someone who is not traditionally straight and cisgender, serving in the U.S. military can be hard. We're hearing headlines today about the U.S. Supreme Court reinstating the ban against transgender military service, lifting injunctions against the ban without fully deciding the case. The confusion evokes the bewildering years when Don't Ask, Don't Tell tried to thread a path for gay people to serve in the military as long as they hid their status. Last summer, we spoke with Anthony Mall about his book, Out of Step. On its cover, two rows of dark, scuffed-up combat boots are interrupted by one pair of bright lavender boots at an angle, and the words, "What makes a pink-haired queer raise his hand to enlist in the military just as the nation is charging into war?" Anthony Mall describes his book as, quote, "a memoir about a bisexual working-class kid joining the Army during Don't Ask, Don't Tell." Close quote. It won the 2017 Nonfiction Award from the Journal and Ohio State University Press, which published the book. When Anthony Mall joined us in studio last July, I picked up on the question posed in the book's title, why did he join the Army?
The book sort of explains a bit about it and never really answers it. So it's a little bit, it was just after September 11th, and everyone was feeling like they had to do something. And a lot of people joined during that time for that reason. It was part because I grew up in, like, you know, a crappy dirtbag town, and I wanted to leave that town.
Yeah, it was Reno.
Yeah, Reno, Nevada. Mm-hmm. Not much love for Reno to this day. But, you know, it's a working class town. I come from a working class family, and like a lot of working class kids, the Army was a way to get out of that, both economically, but also sort of, you know, the adventure Army recruiters often promise. So it was a combination of all that stuff.
You chose military police as your specialty.
Yeah.
Why on earth?
I don't know. I still don't know. Out of Step explains that I grew up in a sort of family that did not have any love for the military. To this day, I'm a leftist and hesitate to speak well about the police. And so everyone was sort of surprised when I chose that. But the truth is, I just wanted to get out of there. I left 2 weeks from the moment I first spoke to a recruiter. So the recruiter calls me on a phone. 2 weeks later, I'm in Missouri at boot camp.
That's amazing.
It was. It was really amazing. Nobody expected it. Certainly nobody expected me to join the police. But my first choice, they were getting rid of that job. My second choice, they had told me I had to wait 6 months. I didn't really know what other jobs were available. And so he told me, hey, if you join the military police, I can get you out of here in 2 weeks. And I was 18 years old and sort of dumb. And so I said, yeah, let's do that. Let's join the police 2 weeks from now.
About Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you write, quote, "this policy played out as rampant homophobia," close quote. What was your first clue?
So my first clue was in basic training. And you sign these papers. They tell you this is what it is on paper. This is what the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy is on paper. But the reality is that because no one is saying they're LGBTQ, everyone assumes that everyone around them is straight. And so everyone talks as though homophobia is normal. And so in basic training, I'm going to paraphrase, but when I hear a drill sergeant tell me that's wrong as two boys kissing.
But it's not kissing.
It's not kissing. That's not the word he uses. When I hear him say that, it's just this, it really sets the tone that, hey, this is not an organization that has respect for LGBTQ troops, despite what it says on paper. For the most part, with small things like that, just assuming gay as wrong, assuming everyone in the room is straight. And sometimes it plays out as homophobia. So I've heard, not directly to me, but I've heard threats to people around me, threats just in the air, both people who say, you know, I'd hurt one of my soldiers if I found he was gay. A lot of old NCOs saying, oh, I'm going to retire the moment that this is repealed. And it's just this undertow of homophobia that existed during the time.
One day in basic training, you pushed back when another recruit used an offensive epithet. You almost slugged him, but didn't. And later, when there was a fight, you weren't even part of it. Read part of that to us.
Sure. Fight! Someone shouted into the hall outside as both a promotion and a warning. Men swarmed into the bathroom. Dressed men from the halls, half-dressed men from the changing rooms, naked men from the shower room. Those close to me and Ackerman rushed to pull Lee off of him. Lee's buddies attempted the same to Ackerman. Those most concerned with punishment for fighting in the barracks rushed over in an effort to stop the whole thing. Each addition to the clash caused only more chaos. People were tackled to the polished floor. More punches were thrown. More shouting. And through it all, little concern was paid to nudity. D*** and asses tumbled through the bathroom. Exposed men bear-hugged each other while the others formed a dogpile atop the cold blue tiles. Hairy body parts were flung through the air haphazardly. It was the gayest thing I had ever seen.
Were you as stunned by that as I was reading it?
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. The way we read masculinity and closeness and aggression and sometimes ignore how homoerotic it is. But yeah, I mean, I did not expect, you know, a bundle of half-dressed or nude men dogpiling each other in basic training.
That's writer and poet Anthony Mall here on The Record on WYPR. We're talking about his memoir of his 8 years in the Army, Out of Step. There is a theme that seems to run through this, that in the Army there is what you call a whole queer reality just under the surface. Describe that.
Because there's this policy that says, oh, you can be LGBTQ, but you can't say you are, and we can't see you doing anything. Everything goes underground, and so everything, flirting, making out, hooking up, everything still goes on. It just goes on secretly. It goes on through websites. It goes on through subtle looks and nods. And only on rare occasions, and I talk about this in the book too, does it actually come to the surface and you get overt flirting between soldiers. Most of it's just, it's quiet. It's secret.
You also position it as part of serving in a predominantly male military. I mean, you write at one point, war literature is almost entirely love stories and they are almost entirely queer. And you also write about basic training and soldier formation as something that sort of reinforces the bonds between men, particularly in the military.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to shamelessly plug my dissertation I'm currently working on. So I'm currently getting a dissertation at Morgan State University, and I'm actually working on this subject exactly, of how the homoeroticism, the queerness of war literature is actually really common and longstanding. So if we look at Homer's Iliad, we get in our first instance of Western war literature a queer love story right at the core of that. And that continues. It continues through, you know, Whitman has a great book of war poems that the queer gaze is very much present in. You get the love story between Siegfried Sassoon and Wilfred Owen in World War I. It's been a core part of war literature in the West since it began. And so I feel like often we're just ignoring, when we look at the homosocial nature of the military, in common discourse, in everyday life, we tend to ignore the fact that this is also really homoerotic, being this close and this intimate. in a mostly male, until recently, mostly male society. And to be fair, the military police does have people of all genders in it, so it wasn't all men. And my basic training was not all men, but it is still majority men, of course.
You describe a conversation with your sergeant at one point, whom you describe as a hard-nosed Latina. And that is kind of the way I assume Don't Ask, Don't Tell worked. Tell us about that moment.
Sure. So it's during this moment when I'm pretty young, I'm 20, 21, and I started hooking up with a guy on base, and that guy was, I'd say, the opposite of discreet, the opposite of what I describe is just below the surface that it is most of the time. And so word gets back to my unit on this small base in the middle of the desert. My boss at the time pulls me aside, and she can't say the words, right? The policy is you can't say the words. And so she just keeps enforcing, you have to be careful, you have to be careful, you got to be safe. We can't have an MP, a military police, with a reputation of being that gay MP. And so the conversation sort of straddles this line between, is she doing this to keep me safe? Is she doing this to protect the unit or herself? And because it can't come to the surface, we can't speak openly about it, it's never really clear. And I leave it unclear in the book as well.
You leave a lot of things unclear, including, yeah. I mean, you had sexual encounters with men. You
yeah.
had girlfriends,
yeah.
even a threesome.
Yeah.
Sometimes you refer to yourself as bisexual, more often as queer. Help us understand.
Sure. So the language on this is always evolving. When I came out at 16 before I joined, and I identified then as bisexual because that was the language I had. But somewhere in my late 20s, there's this conversation that's going on in queer communities about how the term bisexual might leave out gender nonconforming people, non-binary people, some trans people, and so some people start looking for other language, and pansexual comes out of that. I sort of identified as pansexual for a while. And queer, the term queer includes that for me. Queer is attraction to all genders, but queer is also resisting the conversations that go on even within LGBTQ communities about what is gay, straight, lesbian, to really accept that the lines are blurred, and that being okay. And also a call back to the radical politics of the late 20th century and reclaiming that word queer.
You say you were as out as you could be
yeah.
in the Army.
Yeah. I spoke openly about LGBTQ rights, about how I disliked the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. At one point, I had a sticker on my car for SLDN, the Service Members Legal Defense Network. They were one of the leading organizations working to dismantle Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Later in my career, I talked openly about the fact that I went to Pride events, to gay clubs, to drag shows. And I sort of realized as I went on, so you can sense this when you read the book, that early on I'm very nervous, I'm very scared, it feels very illicit, very dangerous. And as I go on, I sort of realize what the law means and how I can use it to be as out as possible. So I know I can't say the words ever. I know I can't be caught kissing a guy, but I know what I can do, and I am allowed to go to parades, to support LGBTQ issues.
Why is it important to write about Don't Ask, Don't Tell now? It's over.
Yeah. So I think a couple things. One, Don't Ask, Don't Tell in this case is sort of just the framework for my coming of age story. It's the how I came of age, and it formed who I am now, and why I don't want to, you know, have a public brand and a personal life, right? I don't want to divide my life like that because of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So it's important for me for that reason. But beyond that, I think there's still a lot of fights left to be had. So sodomy is still on the books for the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Trans people are still in this middle place where it's unsure whether or not they'll be able to serve and what that policy will look like. Military family members are still sort of fighting for equal benefits for same-sex partners versus different-sex partners. And so because there are still a lot of fights, and those are all different fights, there's still all fights attached to this thing that says, that has long said LGBTQ people don't belong here. And while I can no longer advocate anyone joining the military, I think everyone should have the equal right to.
We need to take a quick break here on the record. We're speaking with Anthony Maule about his memoir of serving while queer in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell Army. When we're back, what now? I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
The On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. On average, 22 military veterans commit suicide each day. Anthony Maule quotes that statistic in his very readable memoir of being gay in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell Army. And Anthony Maule is here in the studio. Part of what I love about your writing is that you often intimate what's going on rather than spelling it out. You give us clues that your dear friend Michelle committed suicide before you describe how she did it. Tell us about Michelle.
Michelle and me met here in Maryland. My last duty station was here in Maryland at Fort Meade, and we were in the same unit there. She worked investigations for the military police, and I worked for the dog teams that supported them. And there's something I mentioned in the book about how LGBTQ soldiers, they have, you know, what's commonly called like a gaydar, right? Like we recognize each other in some way that's hard to articulate, especially in a place where we have to be silent. And so We saw each other right away. We noticed each other as queer soldiers right away. And she sort of introduced me, you know, I'm new to Baltimore. She introduced me to Baltimore, but also to the LGBTQ communities here. So she's the one who took me to Pride here for the first time, took me to Grand Central and the Hippo, these gay institutions in Baltimore, and really showed me around, introduced me to this community of mostly gay and bi women, who really were my first gay community in Baltimore. And so she meant so much to me, and me being queer here in Maryland and forming a new LGBTQ community after coming back from a year and a half in Korea, and just really starting a new queer family here. And so she meant a lot to me. And then I separated a little bit before she did, and she moved back up to Pittsburgh with a girlfriend initially, and her family's up there, and the book talks about the difficulty she had, and not really showing it. She was sort of angry, but a lot of vets are angry. And then one day, I got a call from that community, that group of women, letting me know that she had taken her life in a VL hospital parking lot.
One memorable chapter of Out of Step is titled Casualties. It's the same sentence repeated 22 times. I counted.
Yeah.
Would you read that sentence and tell us why you wrote that chapter and why that way?
So the chapter just reads Casualties. Somewhere in this book, I should mention the number of lives, both military and civilian, both coalition and local, that the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan ended. And just repeats that for the whole chapter. I thought it was really important to put that in there. You know, I really emphasize to the press, and they emphasize in their marketing, that this is not a war memoir, right? It's not about a deployment to combat. The deaths in it, there's one combat death that I talk about, and there's one suicide, but it's not killing and dying. It's not... And those are fine books. This is just not it.
You did not serve in combat.
Right. I served 8 years active duty, never deployed to combat. And that's mentioned in the book as well. But because of that, because I don't deploy, because the book's not a combat memoir, not a war memoir, I didn't want to pretend like this wasn't going on still. So I'm talking about my life and my love life and this coming of age thing. But in the backdrop of all that, something that's just below the surface is the fact that... soldiers are being deployed to die and to kill in Iraq and Afghanistan this whole time. And so, you know, going on this time in my mind is this constant ticker we hear every day of the deaths, the total death number. And that's almost entirely the U.S. forces we're talking about, U.S. and coalition forces. We don't really talk about the number of Iraqis and Afghanistan soldiers and civilians who died during that time. And that's important, too. So I just wanted it to be there, to be present in the book, so it wasn't ignored, because it was just below the surface the whole time.
This is On the Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with queer poet and author Anthony Maul about his memoir of serving in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell Army, Out of Step. I was reading an advanced copy. It may not be the final version, but most of the chapters seem to be structured around a photograph. And I was struck that even without seeing these photographs, it's a tribute to your writing that I was completely pulled in. Why did you use that structure?
So interesting thing is, there are no photos in this book at all, but every other chapter, roughly every other chapter, is about photos. It's about photos of before, during, and after I joined. And it actually caught up the press when they first got the manuscript. So when the contest judge sent it to them, they reached out to me and like, oh, good, I see these photos markers in here. Can you send us the photos? But it's not about that. It's sort of ekphrastic work. It's writing about art. It's writing about photography. So I spend a lot of time in the book looking at old photos. So there's a photo of just before I joined. Must have been months before I joined. There's the first photo I have of me posing in my first unit with a woman who'd become my best friend. And there's photos after. There's photos of me and Michelle, one of the closest friends toward the end of my service, at Pride after we got out. And so I think, you know, photos are a big part of memory and life for everyone. And so it just makes sense for me that they are a part of memoir, particularly my memoir, which is, you know, explores a lot of different genres and the way we think about the past and memory.
So these photos exist. You just don't share them with us.
Right. These photos exist. They're real photos, yeah. But they're not in the book. Yeah. They're excluded.
You really don't tell us a particular incident or conversation that prompted you to leave the Army.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. There's that sort of attitude in the Army, too, of like, oh, you need a reason to get out. But the book sort of, I think, shows more than tells. I just couldn't do it anymore. It's a lot of things. It's one, I just stopped believing, right? I stopped believing what the U.S. Army was doing in Iraq and Afghanistan at home. I stopped believing in, like, wanting to be a part of that. But there's also just, like, the growing up thing, you know? If I join the Army for adventure and excitement, at some point I'm like, okay, I got that. Now I want to finish my bachelor's degree and go get a job and, you know, eventually write and become a journalist and a teacher. And write a book. And so I got out to go do all that, too.
Looking at it all, the ladder out of poverty that military service offered, the years of repression in the Army, are you glad you served?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's really hard. Like, it's really hard to look and know how much I benefited from military service, right? Both growing up, traveling the world, paying for both I have two bachelors and a master's that it paid for. I benefited from that, and I can't deny that I benefited from that. But looking at all the things the U.S. Army did from early 2002 to 8 years, 2010, early 2010, I can't say that I'm happy I did it. I'm not happy to have taken part in that. And that's hard to say, and maybe it's hypocritical to say, but it's the truth. I can't say that I'm happy I joined, and I can't say that I want other people to join. I'm just really sober now to what the U.S. did during that time. And I have to consider now as an adult what that means for even my tiny, tiny part in that.
What's next?
So what's next? I'm finishing a PhD at Morgan State University in English literature. So right now I'm in the early stages of dissertation, and then I'm working on my next book. Right now I'm working on a manuscript of poems, actually. So I write mostly poems, and I publish mostly poems, and so I'm working on my first full-length manuscript of poems, and it's sort of about just living in the city and being queer during what feels like the end of the world right now, you know, with climate change, with Donald Trump in office, with feeling right now like everything's coming down in a broad sense, and what it means to just be a queer person trying to live their life during that time.
Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Anthony Mall is a poet, author, and educator. His memoir about serving as a queer man in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell Army is titled Out of Step. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On the Record. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.